Okay, so I want to welcome everybody to this presentation hosted by the CA Service Sponsorship Group of Cocaine Anonymous. This is a speaker workshop on Carry the Message, Not the Wreckage. And we're going to launch into it, but let's first just kind of bring ourselves to center, and we'll do the we version of the Serenity Prayer. And let us take that moment now. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change and the courage to change the things we can and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, once again, my name is Cameron, member of Cocaine Anonymous, and I will be your facilitator for today's presentation. Take home message, you're all going to become circuit speakers. It's a lot of fun being out there on the circuit and getting to travel around the world, not only on Zoom, but actually in person. I was in Denmark last year and Blackpool, England, and I'm off to London again this year. And it can be, I'm not too crazy about traveling, but once I get there and meet the people, it's a lot of fun. So my sobriety date is November 21st, 2003. As a speaker and a facilitator of 12-step recovery, I've spoken to numerous AA, CA group meetings, district roundups, area conventions, CA world conventions. I've also spoken to numerous 12-step recovery audiences across Canada, the United States, the UK, and Europe. And I've spoken on topics such as 12 steps, 12 traditions, 12 concepts. Prior to my recovery years, I coached audience on how to create better keynote speakers, including overcoming the fears of speaking, structuring your talk, dynamics for excellent presentations, powerful openings and closings, key messaging, et cetera. And it's my hope that this CA service sponsorship presentation will prove helpful to those who wish to carry a hopeful message to those who still suffer from addiction in and across the rooms of 12-step recovery, regardless of what fellowship you belong to. How many people here, just to get an idea of the audience, have spoken, have been a main speaker at a meeting, or perhaps you've been asked to be a speaker at an upcoming meeting? You want to raise your virtual hand so I can see what kind of experience we got in the room. Or maybe you're being asked to speak at a convention that's coming up. They're a lot of fun. All right. So we got a few people there carrying the message. Excellent. You know, I've been accused of this presentation creating contrived speakers. You know, I had one person actually criticize me. Oh, you're that type of guy that gets people to stand in front of the mirror and talk to themselves and make presentations, you know. And that's really not what this is about. I'm going to talk about structure and ways to take your message and construct it in such a way that it resonates effectively with your audiences. And as you come to know your talk and learn ways to express it, I just think it makes you for a better speaker, more likely to be invited if you like speaking, to be invited to other meetings, other conventions, other workshops, and get to travel around the world and to be outrageously yourself. You know, I'm the best Cameron you're ever going to meet. I speak really well as Cameron, but I make a lousy any one of you. And it's the outcome of this presentation to help you be outrageously yourself and carry that message. So I'm just going to call up our slideshow here. Okay, so carry the message, not the wreckage, you know, winning the newcomer's confidence. So each individual, now the reason, you know, why do we speak, right? Each individual, and this presentation, all the instructions that I draw out of this presentation can be found in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love that book. It's written like such an instruction manual, not only for finding a higher power that lets us easily control our desire not to drink, use, or act out again, but also on how we carry the message to the person who still suffers. On page 29 in our fourth edition, it says each individual in their personal stories describe in their own language and from their own point of view, the way they establish their relationship with God. And it goes on to say, we can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice. So every addict has a story to share. And somewhere in the fellowship, somewhere in the room, there's always an ear that needs to hear your message. They're going to resonate with your message. You know, and your recovery story as an ex-problem addict is vital to our fellowship. And an effective share will identify with those who struggle with addiction, and they in turn will identify with you. Hey, I'm like you. You're like me. But you don't do it anymore. How is that possible? You certainly have my attention. And then by sharing what happened and what we're like today, the newcomer comes to believe that there is hope for them too, and they can escape their difficulties, and we can win the newcomer's confidence. And a good share helps to achieve that outcome. You know, we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. You know, sometimes we go into a meeting and it's all bad news. It's the wreckage, and it's the drunkalog, the war story, the junkie pride tales. And occasionally, I was at a roundup the other day, and I heard someone just kind of rambling on and was like, what are you really talking about? It wasn't clear what the message was they were trying to articulate. When I felt bad for the speaker, because I know that person wanted to carry a message, but did so in a way that I didn't think was really all that effective. So the one thing we don't want to do, and I'm guilty of this, is we don't want to end up talking too much.
You talk too much, you worry me to death. You talk too much, you even worry my pet. You just talk too much.
Now, whenever I'm at a meeting and I'm going to hear a drunkalog, you know, I always know I'm in for one of those long drunkalog stories when the speaker opens up with, I remember my first drink. I was in my mother's third trimester, and I realized I didn't drink like other fetuses. And I go, oh God, here we go. And it's a long-winded story of drinking or using or acting out, depending on the fellowship you're in. Now, personally, I already know how to drink and how to use and act out. And that's not what I'm here to learn from you. What I really want to know, not the bad news, is I want to know what the good news is. You know, what's the way out? And another thing I've seen with speakers, and again, I've crossed the line on this myself. Some speakers never know when to stop. Many times I've heard a speaker share and they go on and on. And just when I think they're wrapping up and I think, oh man, they're going to come to a conclusion here. This is a good place for them to wrap up. They digress into another stream of consciousness and they go on and on and on ad nauseum. So one of the things we'll learn today is know when to wrap it up and signify to the audience that you're actually wrapping it up, because you don't want to leave your audience the feeling that you talk too much. Okay, so for today's presentation, these are the learning objectives. And by the end of the presentation, you will be able to identify these objectives. We're going to look at 10 strategies for overcoming the fear of speaking in front of an audience. You'd be surprised how many people suffer a fear of going to the podium and standing in front of the room. We're going to look at 5 ways to conduct yourself when speaking virtually or in person, because we do a lot of that today. We're going to identify 3 major benefits of speaking to a 12-step meeting or an event. We're going to list 3 key elements for a compelling story. Identify 3 ways to win the confidence of a newcomer. Know 3 essential components for a well-structured story. Learn 3 ways to dynamically open your share. and four ways to identify and connect with your audience. You know, it's a heck of a thing to connect with your audience. I was speaking yesterday up in north of Toronto here, and it was a really great audience. They were engaged. I was engaged, and you get a rapport back and forth. And for those of you who have spoken and had that experience with an audience, it's a pretty amazing experience to go through. So we're going to learn four ways to identify and connect with our audience. We're going to list, be able to identify five important ways to describe what happened in our story, you know, how we qualify. We're going to describe three ways to inspire others to work the program, because that's ultimately what we want to do, get them into the program and work their steps and get recovered and come join us on the firing lines of recovery. And we're going to learn three approaches to dynamically closing our talk. And even though it seems like there's a lot of structure here that we're going to be doing, and you know, the way in which we manage our story, you really, at the end of the presentation, it's about daring to be outrageously yourself. And you're going to learn a lot of different ways you can apply these dynamics to bring your talk alive, and depending on the context that you're speaking in. So you'll be able to create your own style. And as I said earlier, we don't need another Cameron F. We need you. We need you to be outrageously you. Before I get started, this presentation, We do a seventh tradition. It's entirely voluntary. This workshop is available to everyone who wishes to attend. We do have a seventh tradition. And if you find what we have here useful and you think it's valuable and you'd like to see workshops of this nature continue, please visit our website, caservicesponsorship.org. Your donation of 20 or 10 or 5, it helps to offset our costs. You know, we have a website, you know, we have Zoom costs. You know, we're over 100 people today, so our Zoom costs go up for the 100 plus overage and that sort of stuff. And it just helps us to offset our costs for doing this presentation. And your generosity is greatly appreciated. Okay. Fear of public speaking. It affects one in four of the general public. So what are we really afraid of? So I'm going to just stop the share here and open it up for a bit of discussion. We have a few minutes to discuss things. You know, what are we really afraid of when we go to the podium to speak? You know, why do we have this fear? So who's got some insights on this? What are we afraid of when we go to the podium? Raise your virtual hand and I'll call upon you. Yeah, go ahead, Lisa. Oh, here, I'm going to give you the ability to unmute yourself. Go ahead. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hey, so I think it's fear of shame, which is fear of what you're thinking of me, which is dishonest because I don't know if you're thinking it, but I think it's shame and embarrassment that we're going to screw up. So fear.
Yeah, that's a really common one. What if I screw up, you know, and look like a fool? That can definitely be an impediment to going to the front of the room. Thank you. Roz.
I lowered my hand instead of turned down my microphone. fear of sounding stupid, fear of it not coming out the way I want it to come, and fear of making a fool of myself, you know. All those things. And I'm a Dale Carnegie graduate, but it doesn't matter. I have fear.
Yeah, it's so common, you know, the fear of being judged or the fear of not being liked and, you know, all those things that can go into why should I go to the front of the room and endure that? Karen, go ahead.
Thanks, Cameron. Yeah, my fear is linked to all of those, and also fear of being criticized, being denigrated, being chastised or told off. So that definitely comes into play for me when I'm speaking publicly.
Yeah, and I appreciate that fear. Every now and then I've spoken, most of the time, you know, I can pretty much gauge the outcome. But I remember many years ago, I spoke at this was an AA group, and they got really riled up. People were standing up, telling me to sit down. They don't want to hear it anymore. And guy ran up and grabbed the mic out of my hand and started criticizing me. And I had to make a beeline for the door. The room got really quite wound up. So, but that doesn't happen a lot, thank God. But yeah, I can appreciate that. Con, go ahead.
Yeah, I think a few people have said it already, but in a nutshell, insecurities.
Yeah.
I mean, we know the story better than anyone else because we lived it. So there's no reason to be insecure because we know it better than anyone else. So thank you, Cameron, for helping us with arranging how to put it across.
Thank you. All right, Ashley, go ahead. We'll hear from you and then we'll go back to the presentation.
Yeah, it's been said before, just a million ways of feeling less than for whatever reason. Thanks,
Ashley. Yeah, I've heard, you know, being harshly judged, not being eloquent, forgetting what I want to say, having a mental blank spot. Oh my God, I've lost my place. What am I going to say next? You know, sometimes, you know, we get really nervous, get the butterflies in our stomach and, you know, going to the podium. Oh, my God. I remember I was at university and I was doing humanities and we had these classes where you had to work on a group project and present to the room. And I was always the one that would do the group presentation because they're all kids, you know, 20, 23 years old. And they go, who wants to do the presentation? And I said, oh, I'll do the presentation. Oh, great. You do the presentation, Cameron. And I remember this one class for this young woman. She was about 22, 23. And she's at the front of the room and she's got to present. And her face was so wrought with fear. And she literally shut down right there at the front of the room. It was so painful to watch. I just wanted to go up to her and put my arms around her and go, oh, honey, it's not that important, you know, but the fear just paralyzed her. And I really felt a lot of empathy for her. You know, there's fears about is my story too scary? Is my story not good enough? You know, being judged in that respect. And so we're going to delve into that. We don't want to look like a failure or look incompetent or make mistakes or forgetting where we were or what we were talking about, or we're not worthy enough to be at the front of the room. And as Con said, you know, nobody knows our story as well as we know it. Okay, so let's scoot back to our presentation here. Okay. So having fun with the fear of public speaking, do you know what most people are afraid of? You would think it was public speaking, but it isn't. It is the fear of spiders and snakes. Strangely enough, how many people here are afraid of spiders and snakes? Raise your hand. You don't like spiders. You don't like snakes. My son used to breed snakes when he was a teenager, corn snakes. Oh, my God. My wife would wake up. She'd be getting dressed for an engagement, and she'd be putting her shoe on, and she'd find a snake coiled up in one of her shoes. She was a good sport about things. According to a 2022 poll, 1 in 3 North Americans have some fear of snakes, and 1 in 4 North Americans have a fear of spiders. So, how do we overcome our fear of public speaking? Well, give a presentation on spiders and snakes. Oh, I love that. Okay, but seriously. Okay, 10 strategies for overcoming the fear of public speaking. Number one, structure your presentation. Avoid stream of consciousness sharing. Now, some people, you know, they like the stream of consciousness. They don't want to be contrived, or they don't want to, you know, plan something out. It's an odd thing in 12 steps when people think along this line. I kind of get it. You know, they want to be spontaneous. They want to be genuine. But often when I hear a stream of consciousness share, sometimes it really rocks the room. I went, oh, my God, that was so powerful. And unless, you know, but the thing is that it's stream of consciousness. It just comes out of them and they can't duplicate it. When you ask them, well, you know, could you do that again? And often they can't because they didn't know what they were going to say. It blurted it out, came out the way it did. And just as conversely, some people have gone to the podium, done a stream of consciousness, and it's just the minutia of whatever. And, you know, lots of, you know, incongruities and unintelligible thoughts or ideas being expressed. And the problem with that is you can't look back and say, okay, that didn't work. I'll give you an example. You know, this is why I love structuring my talk. I remember in one of my presentations, I incorporated an alcoholic joke. It was meant to be funny, but also poignant, where I talked about drinking bourbon. And I thought that bourbon should be marketed like cigarettes, you know, a picture of something really, you know, on cigarettes, you have pictures of diseased lungs and, you know, that kind of thing. And I thought on a bourbon bottle, they should have a picture of a woman with a black eye with a warning, contents of this bottle leads to domestic violence. It was meant to be humorous, but here's in structuring my presentation and paying attention to what I'm saying, the audience did not find it funny. It was too close to home for a lot of women and a lot of, you know, spouses that engaged in violence. And I learned, because I understand my presentation, what I'm saying, that doesn't work. And I don't do it anymore. I don't use that. And that's the value of being able to structure your presentation and know what it is that you're going to say. Number two, you want to write down your presentation. Use your own words, but write it down. You know, make point forms, whatever, but think about what it is you want to say and how you want to say it and use your own words. I do recommend that you avoid jargon and avoid vulgar language. The problem with jargon is we don't know what it refers to. Like up here in Toronto, there are a lot of big book thumpers. They were called the muckers, and they would split the heavy drinker or the moderate drinker, the heavy drinker, and the real alcoholic into types. Types one for the moderate, type two for the hard drinker, and type three for the real alcoholic. And when they'd be sharing their talk, they'd be talking, well, I'm not a type two. You know, the rooms are full of type twos. I'm a type three. And the audience, unless they're in on the jargon, or unless you define your terms, if you're going to use jargon, at least define what it is it means. The audience is going, what's a type three? What's a type two, right? So you want to avoid jargon. Vulgar language, you know, it depends on your audience, and you got to know your audience. Now, when I speak in CA, I can have a lot of fun with Cocaine Anonymous because it's a grittier fellowship. I'm not advocating for vulgar language, but you know, you can use vulgar language to some degree. You don't want to overuse it. But in AA, when I speak at AA, and I was delivering an AA talk the other day, I don't do any cussing whatsoever because they won't listen to it. They'll shut down or they'll walk out of the room. It's part of their culture. It's part of the way in which AA expresses itself. They don't tolerate vulgar language. And also they don't, you know, they want to hear an alcohol story and they don't want to see it digress into drugs or whatever. But so my recommendation is to avoid jargon or at least define your terms and, you know, really moderate your vulgar language if you're going to use it and know which audience you can use it with. The other is, the third point, rehearse your presentation. Practice, practice, practice. Now, you could stand in front of a mirror, as I was, you know, kind of called out in a disparaging way. This is the kind of speaker I'm trying to create, but that's not really what I'm saying. You want to rehearse your presentation. You want to think about what you're saying, you know, run it through your mind, you know, speak it, carry it. But here's a better way to practice your presentation. We're invited to so many rooms now. We can go into all kinds of different types of meetings and meetings where we, you know, a topic-based meeting. Ideally, it's a big book solution-focused meeting where we get a chance to speak. And this is where I learned to practice various key messages of my share to see what worked and what didn't work. And so when it came my turn to talk, I would share a thought based on the on the context of what's being shared and try out the material and see how the audience responds to what it is that I'm sharing. The one thing I say about rehearsing your presentation, though, a caveat, we don't want to memorize it. You know, you'll share it enough that you begin to really, you know, be familiar with your own presentation and structure and the way in which you carry it, but you don't want to memorize it because sometimes there will be a mental blank spot or something will come into your mind and then you can lose your spot and then, you know, and disrupt the memory. And I just don't recommend it. It can create a lot of problems. Know your presentation, but you don't need to memorize it. And also, if you don't memorize it, but you know your key points, it allows you to be spontaneous and you know, depending on the audience and the amount of time you have, you can adjust accordingly. Number four, before speaking, take time for prayer and meditation. You know, there's wonderful fear prayer in the big book. Instead, we let God demonstrate through us what it can do. We ask God to remove our fear, direct our attention to what it would have us be. And at once we commence to outgrow fear. So before I share for an audience, I want to get my body centered. Usually I end up going to the bathroom. I freshen my face. You know, and I'll take a moment and I'll meditate and I'll say, God, give me the right words, the right direction, you know, and I get calm. I don't get nervous anymore when I go to the podium. And so, because I relax my body and I calm my emotions, I still my mind so I can be focused on carrying the message to my audience. And sometimes before a presentation, I'll visualize the presentation in my mind. I'll see myself carrying it and looking at the different points I want to make. So I'm prepared to deliver the talk that I need and want to deliver to my audience. Number five, when speaking, focus on your audience. Most importantly, focus on carrying the message to the newcomer. You know, I used to hate being at the front of the room. I hated public speaking because I was always so nervous about being judged and what I was going to say and whether I was going to look stupid or I wasn't going to be effective or, you know, it was a dumb presentation. I wasn't worthy enough to be at the front of the room. And it was all about me. And whenever I focused on me, it was awful. It was an awful way to go to the front room, and I did not like it. But in 12 steps, my focus isn't on me, it's on the newcomer. And when I started focusing in on the newcomer in the audience, that ear that needs to hear a message of hope, faith, and courage, and be inspired to work the program, the podium became a lot of fun, became something to be fun and to use to be of maximum service to God and my fellow human beings. And it's a real delight to go up in front of the room and carry that message. Record yourself before you go to the podium, or if you're doing it on Zoom. Some rooms don't allow you to record, but you can take your phone and you can put it on voice recorder and record yourself when you speak. And I sometimes do this if I'm working on a new share, but record yourself when speaking. And then once you record yourself, you can listen to yourself afterwards, which is really important feedback for understanding what's working about your share and what's flowing and what doesn't work, or maybe something that's out of sequence that should be happening here or there rather than when you placed it. And, you know, one of the values I got out of recording my share back in 2008, I was invited to a meeting outside of Toronto. And I went, and this was one of my first shares that I was doing, but I had been working on my presentation and I was confident that it was a good presentation. So when I went to the front of the room, in those days, I didn't have a smartphone. I actually had a pocket voice recorder and I recorded my share. And then later on, I listened to it and I thought, man, that was a great share. Well, there's at the time, and they're still in existence today, there's this Icelandic hub, speaker hub called xa-speakers.org. And you can listen to 12-step speakers across numerous fellowships. And they were the go-to people in 2008 for speaker recordings. Well, I called them up and I said, I just heard the most incredible speaker. you got to get this guy on your platform. They said, well, send us his MP3. So I fired off my MP3. They posted it. And like 20,000 downloads later, I'm getting invited all around the world to speak. Now, I know it was a little bit of self-promotion, but, you know, there's a lot to be gained in recording yourself when you speak. And often, you know, you might be asked to share at a convention and they'll go, do you have a recording of yourself? And if you've recorded some of your shares, go, absolutely. And you can send them a recording and then the programming committee can make a decision on whether they would like to have you, you know, carry the message at the event. And like I say, so afterwards, listen to yourself speak, make notes and revise your share accordingly. 8. Remember, you'll never have a more accepting or forgiving audience. They all want to see you do well. Even when it's a bad share, no one's going to come up to you and go, oh, that was an awful share. Actually, that's not true. When I spoke at an AA meeting, I remember walking in and they had a big banner, meeting makers make it. And of course, I'm a big book solution guy. I went, oh God, what's this audience going to be like? And I remember doing my share and I was vulgar there. It was an AA audience and I had a certain amount of vulgarities, which did not go over. And at the end of my share, when people normally should be clapping, the room is dead silent. And I remember this woman saying in a loud enough voice that everyone could hear it, well, I didn't like that at all. But that doesn't happen a lot. Most of the time, your audience is very forgiving and accepting, and they're going to applaud. So, you know, give it a shot, you know, experiment, have fun with it. Another thing about sharing is share from the I perspective. You want to avoid you language. You know, mostly when I'm sharing the solution, I talk about either my own experience or sometimes I'm inclusive, depending on the context, with we language. But I very rarely will use you. You know, you should be doing that. You should be doing this and you shouldn't be doing that. And the problem with the you perspective, and some speakers do it, it sounds preachy. And nobody likes to be, I don't think anyone in our fellowship likes to be preached to. So I tend to avoid you language. Also, when you speak from the I perspective, it's your story, it's your experience, it's yours. Nobody can take that away from you or argue with you about it. It's your experience. So speak from the I perspective. And of course, the 10th thing is to have fun. It's a lot of fun being a keynote speaker, a convention speaker, workshop speaker. You can have a lot of fun with the audience, especially if the motive is correct. If the motive's to be of maximum service to God and your fellow human being and carry a message to those that suffer, it's a lot of fun being at the front of the room. And I've certainly enjoyed it, you know, all because God gave me a big mouth. And it's allowed me to try. I never did any traveling till I started speaking. Now I've been all over the world thanks to AA and CA, and it's been such a generous fellowship. Okay, 5 ways to conduct yourself when speaking virtually or in person. So we'll talk about virtual meetings first because there's so much Zoom. I've done like 600 keynote shares since Zoom came out with the COVID epidemic. Which was really exciting. Zoom's a really exciting platform because it's allowed our fellowship to come together as a global forum. And that has opened up avenues for a lot of people to express their shares by speaking. I've come to know so many speakers back prior to COVID when you actually had to call a speaker to show up at an in-person meeting. And, you know, there was a selection process and there was a certain core group of speakers, especially for, you know, big conventions in different parts of the States or Canada or the world. And but Zoom opened it up. And it also made speakers more accessible to the fellowship. Because it was certainly a lot cheaper because you didn't have to pay, you know, when I'm going over to England, you know, they got to pay an airfare and a hotel. And, you know, there's a certain expense to going with it. But with Zoom, you know, we're able to access speakers all over the world. But because it's a virtual meeting and we're here on Zoom, that doesn't mean we can, you know, I don't recommend we dress, you know, whatever way we like. Like today I'm thinking, well, I'm gonna, you know, dress appropriately for this presentation. So before presenting, I take a look at myself in the mirror or on camera, and I make sure, you know, I have my close-up personal face on. Women, attention to makeup and coiffing and all that sort of stuff. You want to look good. So I thought, you know, I'm going to wear a tuxedo today and look the appropriate part and find a background that I think is fun and, you know, conducive to this presentation. And I put a lot of thought into it to addressing my audience in the best way I can possibly do that and make it fun and engaging for the audience too. You want to sit comfortably in your chair. You don't want to be standing or walking around in front of your computer or on your phone walking or, you know, doing your shopping while you're speaking. You want to sit comfortably in your chair. You want to focus on your camera, make eye contact with the camera, and deliver your presentation. Sometimes when I'm speaking, when I have a grid right now with, you know, from this perspective, I have, you know, just a series of squares down the side of my computer. But when I'm looking at a grid of people and I'm speaking, sometimes I can see, I'll see people and I'll see how they're reacting. And if someone's really reacting favorably to what I'm saying and they're nodding and they're smiling, I'll focus on that person. I'll look at that person. And, you know, you get an engagement there. And that's, you know, it's that helps, you know, make the presentation that much more fun and pleasant. And it gives you feedback that you're actually connecting with your audience. Use a laptop or a desktop computer rather than a phone. Make sure your screen is tilted correctly. We don't want to see the insides of your nostrils or the top of your head. You know, you want to be looking directly at at your audience. Watch your facial expressions on your audience grid. See, you know, if they're engaged, they're smiling, laughing, nodding, etc. And speak clearly and modulate your tempo for emphasis. Now with Zoom, because we're working with mics, you know, usually we can carry the loudness of the volume of our voice quite effectively. Whereas in an actual in-person meeting, it's a little different. But you do want to modulate. You don't want to talk too slowly, but you don't want to talk too fast either. And sometimes you want to slow down for emphasis. Sometimes you want to speed up for whatever. In-person meetings or live meetings, I'm a big fan of being well-groomed. I speak and carry myself differently when I'm well-groomed and I show up. Like I went to more of a rural AA meeting yesterday, and a lot of people were very casually dressed, but I showed up in tweed because I love tweed. I had a tweed cap and tweed jacket and a waistcoat, and I was dressed well. I had my favorite brogue shoes on, and I felt good about myself. I felt, you know, like, and so that has a certain way of affecting me when I speak. So I like to be well groomed and dress appropriately for the situation. You want to stand when you're on stage or in front of a podium. You want to stand in one place. Some speakers can move about the stage, but it takes a certain kind of speaker to do that. And I haven't seen a lot do it well. So I generally plant my feet firmly in one spot and I make eye contact with the audience and I start to speak. And as I'm speaking to my audience, I will look at somebody and I will speak to that person for a few moments, make eye contact and connect. And then I'll focus on someone maybe in the back of the room and focus on them. And then someone down in the middle of the audience. And I move on, and I'm engaging with the audience. I'm making eye contact and focusing on them and making that kind of a connection. Now, occasionally you may have to speak at an in-person meeting where there's no mic. Or hopefully you don't have to do that if it's a large room. Small rooms, it's not really a factor, but in a larger room, having a mic is important. And if there is no mic, then you're going to have to project your voice. And when I'm in a large room and there's no mic, I speak to the person at the back of the room. I modulate my volume to make sure that that person can hear me. That means everybody else in the room can hear me too. Also, I was listening to a speaker yesterday at the mic, and this person's been around and spoke for a long time, but he spoke so quietly, even though there was a mic, I couldn't hear what he was saying. So when you're at the mic or speaking without one, you want to say it loud and you want to say it proud. You know, it's your story. It's an important story. Put it out there. Don't whisper it down the well. Shout it from the rooftops. Take note of your audience's engagement. Make sure that, you know, they're engaged. They're smiling. They're laughing, nodding their heads, just like you do in a virtual meeting. Pay attention, because sometimes I'll crack off with a joke and it doesn't, and it misses the mark. And I know it misses the mark. And that caused me to make note. That's something to reflect on and, you know, look at that. Sometimes it's the audience. Sometimes make fun of AA audiences because they're so formal. And I'll be tapping the mic. Hello, hello. Is there anybody out there? You know, sometimes an audience can be really stone-faced about things. So take note of how your audience is engaging. And again, smile. Have a nice smile on your face. Positivity, speak clearly, modulate your tempo for emphasis. Okay, three benefits of speaking. Why should we speak, right? Well, first, number one, it fulfills tradition 5. Our primary purpose is to carry the message. In CA, it's our message of hope, faith, and courage. In AA, it's our experience, strength, and hope. You know, and those vary depending on the fellowship, to the addict who still suffers. That's why I'm speaking, because I'm trying to be a benefit of maximum service to the person in the room that's suffering, that needs to hear a message of hope, faith, and courage. Now, there's another reason why we speak. And it goes to our narrative of how we carry the narrative of our message. Now, I'm going to try not to be too academic here, because I learned about this when I was at university. And one of my professors had done a longitudinal study of recovery genres. Now, there's two primary genres of recovery narratives we hear in the rooms. And it's pretty much the same in any fellowship. There's the recovered narrative and the recovering narrative. The importance of how we identify as members of our 12-step program can have a tremendous bearing on our own recovery. So as I said, there was two recovery genres, the recovered addict versus the recovering addict narrative. Now, recovery stories are consequential for the person's experience of recovery, since it seems that the telling and retelling of an empowered, quote, recovered narrative, I am a recovered alcoholic addict, with its clear beginnings, its turning points, and its favorable results and outcomes, may well be critical for stable and consistent recovery. What she found was, in this longitudinal study, is that those that identified as recovered, that they had recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, were actually showing consistent abstinent rates. And further studies in this genre of narrative, such narration articulates, but also facilitates the member's consistent affiliation with and the appropriation of our 12-step master narratives. The master narrative mostly is, you know, our narrative from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, what was interesting was, alternatively, the telling and retelling of an ambiguous, always recovering narrative in which the addict questions their received spiritual principles, they ponder hypothetical life paths not actually pursued, they envision their abstinence of both good and bad, and they found that this may perpetuate a cyclical life in which relapse occurs and permanent recovery eludes the 12-step member. It was a fascinating study. If anybody's interested, I can certainly send you the study and you can read it for yourself. But it was a really interesting insight on how we identify as members within our fellowship. Just to reiterate this point, and this is from other studies regarding the way in which we share our stories, central to the 12-step recovery culture is the personal story of the recovered addict. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. Now, the member's personal story reinforces the figured world of 12-step recovery. These narratives maintain the boundaries that structure and empower the 12-step recovery culture. That's why we, you know, it's monkey see, monkey do. There was a time when the big book was all but lost in the fellowship back around 1980. And it was all just whatever, a lot of treatment center rhetoric and that. And it was being reinforced by speakers, constantly reinforcing these tropes that they had picked up in treatment. And it changed the fellowship and recovery rates started to plummet. And thank God for people like Joe and Charlie and Wally P and Back to Basics and the Primary Purpose Groups out of Austin, Texas, and the Big Book Step Studies out of Hyannis, Connecticut. They started to revive the Big Book and its recovery narrative of the recovered addict and recovering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind to body. And it started to shift the fellowship back to our main solution. But by sharing their personal stories of what they used to be like, members identify as addicts. Their war story conveys important criteria for potential members to identify and label themselves as addicts. Hey, I'm like you, you're like me. And there's an identification that goes on. Lastly, and this is about as most academic as I'm going to get in this presentation. Furthermore, personal testimonies are significant to the newcomer because the storylines of recovered addicts objectify the central cultural elements of our 12-step world, such as the importance of attending meetings, getting a sponsor, helping other suffering addicts, doing service work for your 12-step group. And by listening to the narratives of recovered members, the newcomer learns the culture of 12-step recovery. You know, you hear people in the rooms going, oh, just keep coming back, sit in a chair until your ass falls off. And these kind of, you know, unworkable, failed bromides, because that's what the newcomer learned from previous speakers and it gets passed on. So the newcomers, when we share, the newcomer learns the model of a 12-step testimonial. By listening to other members and through the telling of their story, the newcomer comes to understand their own life as a member of our 12-step program. And the 12-step rhetorical language provides an attractive element that connects the newcomer to the 12-step culture and assures them that their drinking, their using, and their acting out problem can be solved. We carry the good news, not the wreckage, resulting in behavioral transformations of newcomers. Or as our big book says, when we connect to this power greater than ourselves deep down within us, a profound alteration in our reaction to life. And these are this is a really important benefit of speaking, because it focuses our identity as recovered members of our fellowship. Lastly, the third benefit of speaking, Bill W. suddenly realized in order to save himself, he must carry his message to another alcoholic or addict. It's important for them, the newcomer, to realize that our attempt to pass the message of our experience, strength, and hope onto them plays a vital part in our recovery. They are actually helping us more than we're helping them. So those are the three biggest benefits. I know that's a lot of thick narrative to delve into, but I will post the slideshow along with the audio, and you can review the workshop at your leisure. Okay, three key elements for a compelling story. One is structure. Now, the big book gives us specific instructions on how we structure our story. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. That's generally the structure of a recovery story. Now, the substance that goes into that story, the message that we're conveying, has to be able to interest and hold the addicted person. It's got to have depth and weight to it. And three is outcome. We believe that only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that newcomers will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. So let's break it down and take a look at this. Okay. Carry the message, not the wreckage. When you're speaking, constructing your story, you want to avoid the drunkalogue and the junkie pride stories. You know, it's about the good news versus the bad news. We're all experts in the bad news. We're all experts at drinking, using, or acting out. I sometimes make a joke from the podium. Anybody here need more experience in drinking, using, or acting out? Raise your hand. You know, it's funny, but it carries the point. You know, we already know how to do that. What we really want to know is the good news. Is there a way out? So many of our meetings and our speakers can drift into Oprah Wine Fest, or what I call open, disgusting meetings, where it's nothing but problem, group therapy without a therapist. And they're just awful meetings. And I think it often leads to those meetings can lead to what I call sobriety, where I know I can't live with my addictive behavior, but I don't know how to live without it. And I go to these meetings and I just go into sobriety and I start going crazy. And suicide rates in 12 steps today is 80 times higher than normal society. An untreated addict in the first 5 years of abstinence without a solution is 80 times more likely to commit suicide. Some of you may have known some people that have committed suicide. I've buried 47 people to date that I've worked with directly, and 9 of them committed suicide. They could not, would not see our way of life. And those statistics are from the Oxford Handbook to Psychiatry. Okay, 3 ways to win the entire confidence newcomer. Again, I love the big book because it's right there in the big book. It outlines it so clearly for us. Number one, we're ex-problematics. That's very compelling to someone who can't stop. And they come into the rooms and they meet people just like them, or even gone even further down the rabbit hole than they have, and they don't do it anymore. That's really compelling to someone who wants to stop but can't stop. 2, we've got a solution, right? The 12 steps. We've found a solution, the 12 steps, especially as it's outlined in instructions in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and who's properly armed with the facts about themselves. They know what it's like to live in that inescapable hole. They know what it means to be an addict, right? They understand that. And they can generally win the entire confidence of another addict in just a few hours. But until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. So 3 types of shares. These are, you know, there are other types of shares, but these are generally the typical shares what we have in the room. And some of them we always get a chance to do. Like, for example, in a lot of meetings, we go around the room and introduce ourselves. This is a very short share, usually less than a minute. Then we have what's called, sometimes when I see this a lot in AA, when you're chairing a meeting or introducing a speaker, the host will have to qualify. So it's an identification share where you qualify as an addict. And that's usually 3 minutes or less. You can go a little bit more or a little bit less, but it's generally about 3 minutes or less. How do I qualify as an addict? And then, of course, we have a main speaker share where you've been invited to speak at the group or the workshop or the event or the convention. And that can range anywhere from 20 minutes to 60 minutes. Occasionally, I'll hear someone, they only get 15 minutes. Not a lot I can say in 15 minutes, but generally, they're anywhere from 20 to 60 minutes. So introducing ourselves. So let's talk about introducing ourselves. Now, you can have a lot of fun just by introducing yourself. So when sharing at a meeting, how do you introduce yourself? Now, I often hear the most common one is, "Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm an addict." That's the most common way I hear people introduce themselves. "I'm an addict." And I get that. And everyone goes, "Oh, they're an addict. I'm an addict." Sometimes you'll hear people say, "Hi, my name is Cameron and I'm a recovering addict." I'm not a fan of that identification. As I explained earlier, the recovering narrative tends to create an ambiguity that often leads to a weaker sense of identification within the 12-step program as recovered versus recovering, where I'm always sick. I'm just an arm's length away from my next drink, etc. My name is Cameron. I'm a recovered addict. Now, I don't mind this one, but I'd like to have an opportunity when I say, hi, my name's Cameron, I'm a recovered addict, that I can define what I mean that by that. Hi, my name's Cameron, I'm a recovered addict. By that, I mean I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body where I can easily control my desire to drink, use, or act out. You know, that then I you know, it makes a little more sense and has a little more impact. Hi, my name is Cameron. I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous. I like that because it says in the big book, when sharing, we often refer to ourselves as members. And I like that. I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous. And when I get a chance to define that, and I've been using this next introduction, this has been my favorite one as of late. Hi, my name is Cameron. I'm an addict who doesn't use. Hi, my name is Cameron. I'm an alcoholic who doesn't drink. Right? And that's kind of a paradoxical thing to say. I'm having fun with my audience. Hi, I'm an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use. And that gets people thinking. I'm doing it deliberately because I'm trying to share a narrative that they don't necessarily hear a lot and gets them thinking, grabbing their attention. My name is Cameron. I'm an addict who knows how to stop. You know, I'm conveying. I'm armed with the facts about myself. I got a way out of the hole. Occasionally, I'm in a room full of stodgy old school status quo members. A lot of blue hairs, white hairs, and you know, they tend to be a little grumpy. And I'll have fun with the group, and I go, "Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm an intelligent agent, a spearhead of God's ever advancing creation. It's great to be here." And you can hear the old timer, "Oh, well, who does he think he is? That sounds like a lot of ego." And I'm, you know, I'm having fun with it, right? And it's right out of our big book on page 49. It says, "Are we not intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever advancing creation?" I read that and I thought, that's a great job description. I'd like to sign up for that job. So these are the different ways we can play with our audience, just in terms of how we introduce ourselves when we go around the room. Have some fun with it. Qualifying as an addict. What qualifies you to share a message? What are the facts about yourself? Right? What can you say in 3 minutes or less that will persuade those in the meeting to say, "Yes, I'm like you, you're like me, but you don't do it anymore"? And so, you know, my name's Cameron. I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic addict, doesn't drink or use. And that's a rather paradoxical thing to say, because everything in my experience tells me I will drink and use again. And I drank and used morning, noon, and night from the age of 20 to age of 46. In the beginning, it was my solution. It was the answer to all my problems, my restless, irritable, discontented, bored, depressed disposition. And it seemed like the answer. It was great. It was my solution. But as I continued to drink and use, it became what seemed to be a luxury in the beginning, now became problematic. And as the illness progressed, I started to have problems along as well as having a good time. And in the end, it was nothing but problems. And the biggest problem was I didn't want to drink or use again. And yet I did. Somehow, someway, I kept succumbing to the desire to drink and use again, like a dog that returns to its own vomit. Because I got this lie in my head that convinced me somehow, someway, I should be able to enjoy my next drink or drug. And that liar would always win the argument. And I would succumb to the desire. I'd pick up the first drink or drug. I'd go on the proverbial spree where I have no idea how long it's going to last. Could be a day, a week, a month, a year or more. I don't know. Then I'd come out of it full of remorse, horror, and hopelessness. And then I make a firm resolution not to do it again, only to succumb to the desire again. And round I go on this wheel of misfortune, spree, remorse, resolution, pursuing my love of drugs and alcohol to the gates of insanity or death. That's what I'm like as an untreated alcoholic. Yet as a member of Cocaine Anonymous, I found someone who was armed with the facts about themselves, the common solution, and they had a generosity of spirit and they showed me a way out. And for the last 20 years, I've been able to easily control my desire to drink, use, or act out. Hence, I'm an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use. There, that's more or less 3 minutes. And that's a good outline of what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I can do that in 3 minutes. So, you know, having your introduction, having a 3 minute share, and then, of course, the main speaker share. So you want to be able to open by introducing yourself. And you can have a lot of fun with introductions, and I'll come to this in a minute. Two, you want to share what we used to be like. Not what it was like, but what we used to be like. You want to tell an effective war story. You want to win the newcomer's confidence. You want to share what happened, how you hit bottom, reached that turning point, found that jumping off place, that moment of clarity where you come out and go, I got to do something, and how you found and worked a solution to that. Share what your life is like today. These are your bragging rights to bear testimony of God doing for you what you can't do for yourself. Talk about the promises fulfilled. Talk about how your life is taking on a new meaning. Talk about how you have found the fellowship that you crave and to be a part of. And then closing your talk, to have a signature sign off. Okay. So opening your share. Introduce yourself. You can tell a humorous analogy or short story or quote a big book, and you can mix it up. You can have a number of these different things. I was yesterday when I was speaking, I was connecting with one of the Al-Anon archivists, and she knew I was going on the podium to speak, and she sent me something from the archives from Al-Anon, and I thought, oh man, that's such a great thing. I'm going to open with that. So when I got to the podium, I stood at the mic, and before I even introduced myself or anything, I opened with the greatest love, the love of a beautiful maid, the love of a staunch true man, the love of a baby unafraid has existed since time began. But the greatest love, the love of all loves, even greater than that of a mother, is the tender, infinite, passionate love of one drunken bum for another. And of course, that went to an AA audience, that went over well. So, you know, you can have some fun. You might have a favorite quote or a joke. You know, sometimes I, you know, when I'm in Cocaine Anonymous, I tell the joke of, you know, a hard user and a real addict goes to their dealer for some crack. And the dealer says, oh God, you won't believe this, but I got these magic 8 balls of crack cocaine. It is the best crack you'll ever smoke. It's the bling of blings. And here's the thing, no matter how much you chip off the 8 ball, it never, ever reduces in size. And the hard user goes, well, I'll take one of those. But the real addict says, you better give me 3. Right? So you can open with a joke. You can quote a passage in the big book. You know, nothing ensures immunity from drinking, using, or acting out as intensive work with other addicts. It works when all other activities fail. All the efficacy, all the power of the program is in sponsorship. We get to keep it by giving it away, pay it forward. That's a great way to open too if you're carrying a sponsorship-oriented message. And you can vary it depending on how you want to open your talk and grab your audience's attention. Sometimes I'll launch into it and then I'll introduce myself my name's Cameron. I'm an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use. Sometimes I'm open with that. Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm an alcoholic addict, doesn't use. That's a paradoxical thing to say. And I'll give a little clarity of that. And then I'll launch into my presentation. We want to share what we used to be like. Now you can play with the structure too. You can start off with what you used to be like. Sometimes I'll start off with what I'm like today. And then I'll juxtapose it with what I used to be like. And then I'll conclude with what happened, how I found a way out. But the part of our story, which is an important part of our structure, is what we used to be like. And this is, you know, we want to tell our war story, right? How should we tell our war story in a way that makes sense? So we want to tell the newcomer. And again, our big book gives us specific instructions. Tell the newcomer enough about your drinking, using, or acting out habits, symptoms, and experiences. Encourage them to speak of themselves. You know, if you ever work with another addiction, I'm an alcoholic drug addict, but I've worked with sex addicts and food addicts and cutters and hoarders and love and fantasy addicts. I was working with under earners as an addiction pattern. I never heard of it. It was such an odd addiction pattern. I didn't really know a lot about it. I didn't even understand it. So I said to the newcomer, share with me, what does it mean to be an under earner? What are the habits and symptoms and experiences? And they educate me all about their addiction. And so I learned through their war story how that addiction pattern rolls out. But we want to tell them, you know, tell the audience a little bit about our drinking, using, or acting out. We want to tell them how, now, the other thing too about habits and symptoms. Now, I've heard people identify, you know, oh, I used to prostitute myself. I've been to jail. I've lived on the streets. Now, some addicts, that may be their experience. That wasn't my experience. It doesn't resonate with me. When I hear people talk about that kind of qualification, I start thinking, well, maybe I'm not an addict, right? Behavior patterns can vary a lot, even within a tradition. You know, as an alcoholic, I'm an everyday bourbon drinker, but I've worked with alcoholics who drink beer only. I've worked with alcoholics who drink wine only. I drink with, I've worked with blackout drunks. I've worked with blackout drunks who smoke crack cocaine, not because they're crack cocaine addicts. They smoke crack cocaine because it makes them lucid and awake enough to continue satisfying their phenomenon of craving and drink more. So behavior patterns can vary a lot. So I tend to focus more on my, you know, I tell them how baffled I was, how I learned that I was sick. And I give them an account of the struggles I made. I look at all the things that failed me. I tried going to meetings, reading my big book, having a sponsor, going to spiritual retreats, trying to sober up for my wife and children. My doctor warning me that I got liver disease, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, but they all failed me. And, you know, when I identify with the newcomer on and I share as a qualification the strategy that failed to hold me sober, most addicts identify because these strategies are kind of universal. They apply to any and all addiction patterns, whether you're an alcoholic, drug addict, food addict, whatever. I remember I tell the story about how baffled I was. And when I learned that I was sick, you know, back in the 80s, Escobar was running the cocaine cartels, and the cocaine that was in Toronto was really good cocaine. And every Friday, I worked in the financial district of Toronto, and every Friday night, there'd be some posh party going at some luxury home or condominium. And I remember going to this one party, very posh, very upscale. You know, we're all in our business suits. I was wearing three-piece pinstripe suits in those days. You know, the women are all dressed in their finest business attire. And there's, you know, everyone's having social drinking, and there's a lot of cocaine. People are doing lines of coke. Now, I'm an intravenous cocaine user, so I'm sitting on the sofa, and this guy beside me is cutting out some cocaine. He goes, Cameron, would you like to do a few lines? I said, I'd love to do a few lines. So as he's cutting me out some of this cocaine, I take off my suit jacket. I roll up my sleeve, and my arm is just covered in track marks. I put a spoon and a needle on the table, and I start mixing up a hit, and the party stopped. It went dead quiet, and the hostess walked up to me and said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm going to do my lines. She says, you can't shoot up like some junkie in the middle of our little party here. And I said, what? You're judging me on my delivery system? Is this what we're talking about? And I was politely asked to leave and escorted to the door. And as I'm leaving, I'm thinking, I don't use like these people, right? And a lot of addicts can resonate with this. You know, our story has to have depth and weight. I got no control, and I do things that are not like normal people do. Now, I know people that can do a few lines of coke and call it a night, not me. And we want to show the newcomers that mental twist, how our mind lies to us. You know, I use the analogy of the liar. I talk about how the liar always wins the argument. And, you know, and I would succumb to the desire again. So what were you like? This is your opportunity to qualify. And you don't have to spend a lot of time in your talk doing it. I love the effect of alcohol and drugs on my life more than every job I was fired from. I love it more than my children. I'd leave dirty needles laying around the room. I'd find my kid playing squirt guns with them. I love the effect of alcohol and drugs more than my wife. She'd beg, plead, offer those frothy emotional appeals, threaten me with divorce. But I like drinking and using more than my own marriage. I like drinking and using so much that I'm willing to risk my life. I get diagnosed with liver disease. First thought to cross my mind, I need a drink right now. That's awful news. And drank for 3 more years on that. That what I used to be like has depth and weight to someone who can identify with that powerlessness and unmanageability. Yeah, that's like me. You're like me. I'm like you. But you don't do it anymore, right? And that's the power of what we used to be like. It we identify with one another. Now, what happened? This is an important part of our structure because this is what's leading us out of the hole. So we tell them exactly what happened to us, right? And we stress the spiritual feature freely. I remember the man who approached me. I knew this guy. I knew he was a hopeless alcoholic pill popper. And yet he was like Abby Thatcher, fresh skinned and glowing, approaching me. And he was sober. And I'd never seen this guy sober. And I said, "What happened to you?" And he goes, "I found God." And I went, "Oh God, not that." But his sobriety spoke so loudly that I knew something had happened and I wanted what he had. He called it God. And, you know, but I was beaten into such a state of reasonableness. I was open-minded to that possibility. Describe your last bottom, that jumping off place, that turning point, that moment of clarity. Sometimes in my story, I talk about that. On October 31st, 2003, now my sobriety date is November 21st, 2003, but on October 31st, 2003, I had a moment of clarity. I was fishing for brown trout that morning. I'd caught 2 beautiful trout that day. I'm drinking cold Corona beers and smoking $400 an ounce dope, and I'm miserable inside and out. Hated everyone and everything, including myself. And I reached a moment where I said, "I don't want to live this way anymore." And I remember going home and telling my wife that I'm going to sober up. I'm going to go to AA. And I remember her sobbing, crying. It was like stabbed me in the heart. I got such a visceral hit of how much damage I had done to my marriage. And so I quit on October 31st, drinking, smoking cigarettes, and drugs. Now, my sobriety date's November 21st, not October 31st. So what happened? I go to the food show on November 20th. And at the food show, they got beers from around the world, but they're only giving you a lick of the beer. It's like in a little, you know, for those of you who might have taken communion at church, it's a little communion cup, barely a taste, like a lick. And I thought, well, that's not going to cause me to do anything. But when you drink like 400 of them, that kind of adds up. So my sobriety date is November 21st rather than October 31st. Talk about how you found your sponsor, how you encountered that, how they won your confidence. Share your experience about attending meetings and how and when you started your step work. And share about service work that you've done, your participation in the culture of 12 steps. And then what we're like now, like I said, this is your bragging rights. This is where you get to talk about the promises fulfilled, how your life has changed, that profound alteration in your reaction to life. Talk about your health. My liver went back to normal after 6 years. My wife and I are celebrating 34 years of marriage this year. I have a relationship with my 38-year-old daughter and my 40-year-old son, a good relationship. And I was violent as an alcoholic addict. You know, I went back to university and proved myself and did a degree in medical anthropology and religions. And I travel around the world, man. It just, It just gets better and better and better being a member of Cocaine Anonymous. So you talk about the fellowship you found. This is your chance to, it's fun. It's exciting. It's rewarding. It has purpose and meaning being a member of a 12-step program. And we want to convey that, how that reflects into our lives. And then you have your signature sign off. Most people that hear my share, they know when I'm signing off. Some of you have heard me share the story of the addict down in the hole. I usually start my presentation with the addict down in the hole and all the different groups that try to help them, the religious community, the medical community, treatment center community, friends and families, and they all fail them. And I leave people with the addict down in the hole. And I said, well, I got good news and bad news. There's a way out of the hole. And then I stop there. But at the end of my presentation, I go back to the addict down in the hole. And I close with, so the next time you hear the addict crying out for help in the hole, what should we do? Well, we jump down in the hole with them. And they look very bewildered. Now we're both in the hole. But we can turn to our brothers and sisters with a wink and an eye and say, it's okay, I've been here before. I got a way out. A way out for more experience, strength, and hope. A way out to walk hand in hand with the sunlight of the Spirit. A way out, and this is my closing sign off, to be an intelligent agent, a spearhead of God's ever-advancing creation. And I'm for that. How about you? That's one way I can close. I could close with a big book quote. I could close with an analogy, or I could even close with a closing joke. But you want to tell your audience it's over, but you want to do it in a fun and dynamic and memorable way. You know, I heard a speaker the other day, she, at the end of her share, she goes, well, I guess that's it. I don't know what more to say. I think that's it. Thank you very much. I get it. But, you know, there's so much more you can do when signing off from your share. Wow, that was a lot of talking. Once again, I just want to say we have a seventh tradition. If you find this workshop useful, please help us. Consider making a seventh donation at our website, caservicesponsorship.org. It helps offset our cost. It's going to cost us probably close to $200 to do this presentation today. So if you can help us out with 10 or 20 or 5, it goes a long way into helping us, you know, offset our costs with our website and Zoom and all that stuff. And we appreciate your generosity. I will post this recording, the narrative, the audio of the slideshow along with the slideshow, so you can listen to it, you can download it, download the audio and use it for review when planning your own share. And lastly, I want to say I look forward to hearing you share your talk at your next 12-step recovery meeting or convention. Please reach out and let me know. I want to be in your audience. I want to be there cheering you on. Also, I put it out to, if you like, you're working on a presentation, you'd like to, you know, kind of get some feedback, call me up, get in touch with me. I'll set up a Zoom channel and you can present to me. I'll record it for you on video as well as audio. You can present to me. I can offer what feedback. I'll send you that. You can review it. You can make adjustments. Call me back up again and re-present and prepare your talk to be just truly outstanding at the next event you're presenting at. But if you are presenting, give me a shout. Love to hear from you. Love to see you in action. And that is how I carry the message, not the wreckage. And I hope that was useful. Thank you so much. I'll leave the room open for any thoughts or feedback, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Cameron. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you. I'll put my contact information in the chat. If you want to reach out to me and connect, I'm more than pleased to do that. And if you have any questions right now, throw up your virtual hand. I'll be more than pleased to try and answer them. Oh, now you can unmute yourself. Sorry, I couldn't unmute. You weren't allowed to unmute. Go ahead, Joey.
Go ahead, Joey. Hi, Cameron. Just 2 seconds.
I was getting some audio feedback there, Joey. Did you have a question? Cisco, go ahead. You have to unmute, sir.
Oh, thank you, Cameron. Thank you for the presentation. I was going to ask you if you had any other flyers for any of your other meetings. Would you be able to put those in the chat as well?
Any flyers for other meetings? Well, you know, I do the 12 steps in 4 hours, right? Last Sunday of the month.
Yeah, I've been to that. I jumped on a meeting one night and you were doing Jeopardy.
Oh, yeah. Really
thrilled about the Jeopardy. Do you have the information?
For yeah, that's on the website, caservicesponsorship.org. I usually do the Jeopardy games on Big Book and Traditions and Concepts, you know, usually once a quarter. So if you check in on that website, you'll see when we're doing our next one.
Thank you.
Libby. Hey, Libby. Long time no see. You have to unmute yourself.
There you go.
Hi, Cameron. I just wanted to say that I love you. I got so much out of you. Bill and I are sitting here together, and you'll be hearing from me. Thank you.
All right, Libby. Thank you.
Hi.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi, quick question. So, Log and Loser List. Have you ever you mentioned it without calling it the Log and Loser List? You said, I tried this, I tried that. Do you ever mention it as the Log and Loser List in the share?
But that's jargon. So if I'm going to say a Log and Loser List, then I'll back it up with the Log List. I'll explain what I mean by a log as a metaphor of power. But what they really are the secular human strategies that fail to keep me sober. So I define my terms, but I have used Log and Loser List. But if you do that, be sure to define your terms so your audience is in on the jargon.
So just a quick question. I think I've been doing it incorrectly. I say, you know how you can like hold on to a log for a while when you're treading water, but eventually you have to let it go. And then I add, or it gets waterlogged and it sinks. And someone said, I don't think that happens. Does that happen to wood? Like, am I saying the wrong thing?
Yeah, no. Wood gets waterlogged and it sinks. And the other thing about it, you ever tried to hold on to a log that's been in the lake a long time, it's got a slimy coat to it.
Right.
It's very slippery, right?
Right. And I do go into that's human and blah, blah, blah. But I thought I was giving the wrong. Thank you. I love that. Thanks.
Thank you. Roz.
Oh, Cameron, that was awesome. Fantastic. You belong on that stage that's behind you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was great. I just wondered, I'm not seeing the link in there for this, or is that going to come on before you close this group up today?
If you check, I haven't posted it yet. I'm going to have to just tidy up the audio. And I will, if you go back to CA Service Sponsorship, probably in the next couple of hours, it'll be posted there.
I misunderstood. I thought it was going to be posted here and my computer went off for a minute. So I thought I missed it.
It'll be posted on CA Service Sponsorship.
Awesome. Love it. Love you. Thank you.
Thank you, Roz. Anyone else? Any thoughts? Questions?
Joey is asking, because they're having technical difficulties, if you could share the presentation.
Yes, I will. I will share the presentation on CA Service Sponsorship. So. Is that the answer to the question, Camilla? Do I understand it correctly?
Yeah, I believe. Joey, can you hear us, or perhaps can we hear you?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Hi, it's Joey here. Yeah, it was the presentation. If it's possible to share the presentation, if it's to us, just so I can write more notes on the back, that'd be appreciated.
Yeah,
presentation
later today, Joey. Probably in the next couple of hours.
Okay.
I will post the. The slideshow and the audio on caservicesponsorship.org, and you can download it or watch it online or whatever, you know, it'll be there for your use.
I had one more question. Is it possible to also, the study that you talked about, the 12-step study, is it possible to also share that link?
Yes. If you send me an email, Joey, I posted my email address in the chat. Just send me an email and I'll, I'll attach a PDF and send it off to you.
Okay, nice one. Thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation.
You're very welcome. Cheers. Anyone else?
Scott, your hand was up, correct?
Yes, it was, but my question has been answered already.
Excellent. Kel, good to see you.
Good to see you, Cameron. My name's Kel, recovered addict. Cameron, do you ever get a fear around the same show, doing the same show?
A fear around what's the...
I've never shared at a convention, but I've done shows in front of this kind of the same people time and time again. And sometimes I get the voice talking to me that I should change up what I'm saying, even though what I'm saying may be effective for a newcomer.
I get that. I did so many shares since COVID on my typical where I outline the program of action, where I was beginning to fear that people heard me way too much. I was overexposed. I'm saturated. Why would they even come to hear me again? Now, a lot of people like to hear me more than once, but in my mind, there's a fear that, maybe I'm just overexposed. So part of what came out of that, and I found that that's not really just my own fear. It's not really a reality. But I worked on three other shares. I have a share where I talk about chronic relapsing, where I work the steps backwards. I have a share where I talk about the log and loser list, which is a step one presentation. And as of late, I just started working on another share where I talk about responsible sponsorship versus codependent relationships. Because for me, I like to mix it up a little too, I can get bored with hearing my own voice over and over again. But again, you want to measure a measured approach in that, because it's what your audience wants to hear, right? And your audience wants to hear, if you got a particular keynote that you've been delivering and the audience loves it and they want to hear it again and again and again, well, there's your answer, right?
Yeah, so that was going to be my next question. Should I add to what I've already got or rewrite everything again? Or
you can mix it up too. I know the elements of my talk so well that I can mix it up. Sometimes I'm at a meeting where there's only 20 minutes. So what I can do in 45 minutes, I can't do in 20. So I got to think of what I'm going to cut, what I want to focus on. But I know my presentation, so I can be spontaneous and deliver it where it seems fluid and genuine, even though I know it in my mind and I know pretty much what I'm going to say, but I can be flexible with it. And there are times when no one of my talks is exactly the same. There's the same structure to it and the same elements, but things I might say, or I might draw on a joke, or I might share another analogy, or I'll impromptu go off like with the quote I mentioned earlier that was given to me yesterday. So, there's a bit of spontaneity, a bit of, flexibility in the presentation too, to, depending on the mood I might be in.
Good stuff. Thank you, Cameron.
But I can do that because I know my presentation. I know what message I'm trying to bring to the audience.
Good stuff. Thank you.
Lisa, you got your hand up again.
I do. Can you put a plug in for your tradition kind of presentation and tell us if it's online or when you're going to do it again?
Well, I always made the joke, whenever we did teach traditions, you'd have a panel of speakers and traditions are pretty dry material. And usually the panel was bigger than the audience, was the joke. So I started thinking, well, how can I deliver the message of the traditions in a way that's fun and dynamic? And that's how the Jeopardy games came about. I found this website called Jeopardy Labs, and I could build any number of Jeopardy games for a $20 lifetime membership. And what a great deal. So I built Jeopardy games on traditions and concepts, and I try and do one a quarter. I just did one recently on the history of CA and and I did a traditions one back in February. So sometime in the next month or so, I'll do another Jeopardy game on traditions and concepts. And then we always post them and market them through the CA Service Sponsorship Group, which is basically a group that is teaching the fellowship how to be effective, trusted servants. So we'll do more this year, Lisa. Larissa.
Hey there, Cameron. Thank you so much for this presentation. You know, I get emails for the 4-hour recovery workshop, and I got an email for this. I was wondering, is there a calendar for these other ones you do?
Well, the 12 steps and 4 hours workshop we do the last Sunday of every month. And by the way, if anyone's never not been to that, that's a really wild presentation. It's a 4-hour presentation, and we have different facilitators for each step. And we use a lot of, I love Zoom as an andragogical tool because I can do a lot with it. So we have videos we play, we have centerings, we have a little halftime show where a musician comes in and sings us a song of recovery. And again, it was all designed to engage the audience in a way that was fun and memorable and inspiring people to work their steps. So you get to see a lot of the elements of what I've been talking about today come out in that. And the CA Service Sponsorship Group, that's where I do this presentation once a quarter. So we do 4 of them a year. And again, just like my own shares, they vary slightly. You've seen the slideshow. It's generally the same slideshow, but my narrative might change a little bit with each slide. But we do 4 of them a year. We do the Jeopardy games on various subject matter, history, traditions, concepts. And that's where I do those presentations. Then we have our own home group, which is TGIF and the Midnight Rounders on Friday nights at midnight on the Eastern time zone. And that's an open meeting where we get a chance to weigh in on a particular solution topic. Great way to come out and share and try your key messaging. You know, like I said, there's lots of ways you can practice your shares by going to meetings that let you have a few minutes to share about a solution and try out your material. So those are my suggestions. Well,
can you post that info on the meeting? And you know, you were talking about the loser, that somebody was saying that you went over the loser log. Is that, yes. Is there a calendar for these kind of presentations, or well, is that on this meeting we're talking about on Sunday?
Yeah, no, that like the log, like here reminds me of my wife, because my wife's always asking me, what's your schedule? And my schedule is constantly changing. Because I'm doing like 3, 4, or 5 presentations a week. And some of my friends want to know when I'm speaking next, and just trying to keep them informed when my next share is, whether it be on relapse or, you know, 12 steps or whatever, is daunting. So I try to, you know, I try to let people know when I'm speaking, but that's a chore in itself.
Thank you.
Nick.
Yes, hi, Cameron. Thank you for this wonderful presentation and very instructing. I was just curious, how would you instruct the sponsee about this stuff? Quite briefly, you know.
How do you mean to instruct them? You mean in terms of?
Yeah, well, yeah. Just how would you give them like cut clear instructions, like what's the proper way to share in a meeting?
Well, the first step is to get them to a point where they've recovered from their addiction pattern, and they're starting to practice their program on a day-by-day basis. And then if they're interested in sharing, you know, you can instruct them on different ways they can introduce themselves. You could have them, you know, put together their little 3-minute, how do you qualify as an addict? You can take that, you know, yet this presentation, as I said, is going to be posted on the caservicesponsorship.org website. So you can always direct them to that if they're inspired to do a share, or maybe they're being asked to share, be the main share at another meeting, you know, and you can instruct them that way.
All right. Thank you. And do you have like a like an outline for writing your share?
No.
So if you do a long one, a main share, like you would like to prepare it and write it out?
I do. When I did my first share on my experience, strength, and hope of the where I outlined the 12 steps, you know, I literally put pen to paper and, you know, this is what how I want to introduce myself. This is the story I'm going to share. This is how I'm going to qualify. And I'd make points and I would look at it and I would think about my messaging. And, you know, I might go over my mind how I want to say it. I'd go to meetings and I might share an aspect of that to see how it flies if I'm unsure whether or not that particular key message is going to resonate. So it's kind of an organic approach, but the slides of the slideshow give you a structure on how to what it is you want to make notes of and make it your own, right? You want to make it your own. You know, you don't want to duplicate me. You want to make it your own. Tell your story, what makes sense to you. You let the spirit work through you in a way that that wants to communicate, right?
So you get the key elements you want to share.
Yeah, it'll be in yourself. The slideshow. You review the slideshow. I think it's I think it's 40 slides in the slideshow. So it breaks it down for you and gives you an outline as to how to approach your the elements of your share. How you structure it and convey it is entirely you, but the structure is there for you to be mindful of how you want to bring it together.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Roz.
Oh, sorry. I was, couldn't mute, unmute. You are so patient. Oh, my God. You were mentioning that meeting, the midnight. How do you get information? I'd like to come to that meeting.
If you go to the 12 steps, 4 hours, .org website, you can see the flyer for that group.
Okay.
Roz, I'll send it to you, Roz.
Okay. Well, I've done that workshop before, but I didn't know that. Is that the same website that I go to?
It's the same website. You'll see the flyer for the TGF and the Midnight Rounders. I also have the flyer there for the speaker workshop. And I will also post later today on that website a message. If you missed it, click here to go to the slideshow and audio. So that's another.
Okay. Well, thank you. And thanks, Lisa. I heard you. I'll look for it too. Thanks.
There you go.
Okay. Bye.
Lisa, you have another.
I don't question? Want this to end.
One more thing. I promise this is it. I think
like.
Somebody asked about the log and loser list. Well, come on the last Sunday of the month to the 12 steps in 4 hours, which I accidentally will say 4 steps in 12 hours, and you'll learn all about the log and loser list. And one of the things I go almost every time, and the people I work with go every month. It's one of my like last Sunday of the month things. And the first few times I did it, I didn't print out the workbook. Mistake for me. So now I have it. I have it spiral bound. It's really a lot more helpful for me. And then also, if you go to TGIF, you know, Cameron, you forgot to say how awesome it is to show up 30 minutes before. Because there's a whole DJ funky thing and it is all recovery and funny. So show up 30 minutes prior. That's it.
Yeah, I love doing the pre-meeting windups. Or who's ever chairing the meeting has the luxury of being the pre-meeting host. And we play lots of music and we get into the mood for the meeting, which starts at midnight. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Thanks, Lisa. Anyone else? Any other thoughts or comments, questions? If not, I look forward to, as I said, please, if you're going to do a share, reach out. I'd love to see you do well and come join me on the circuit. Hey, we may share a podium somewhere in England or Spain or Sweden or Denmark or Canada or the United States, whatever. It's a lot of fun. Hope to see you out there. All right, Camilla, anything else we need to cover before we sign off?
All good stuff. Some people are asking me how they can join Spiritual Gangsters. My number's in the chat. Reach out. Janine, I have you.
Yeah, Camilla, one of the recovery groups that I connected with Spiritual Gangsters. They a lot of these members have come to the workshop and they like working with the workbook and sponsoring others. And they got, I think you, what do you got? 5, 6, 7,000 people in that fellowship. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah. It's good stuff. So next Sunday, don't forget, if you haven't signed up, sign up today. I've put all of that information in the chat as well.
Thanks, Camilla. All right, everybody, you got my contact details. Feel free to reach out to me. You can call me, email me. More than pleased to be helpful. I'm retired, so I pretty much do as I please, which is a really great way to live. And we're going to so nobody misses out in the parking lot. We're going to just all sign off together. So we're going to do that in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Thanks, everybody, for joining us.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye now.
Bye.